Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda and I am in kind of sunny but not warm Southern California. And my co-host Margaret Sheldon from Boston's on the line. How are you?
I'm fine. No matter what I say about the weather, it will be different by the time I finish the sentence. So what can I say? It's been an odd spring. That seems to be true for everyone. It's been an odd spring. Yeah. So you have 1 week and counting.
I know. It's crazy. It's totally crazy. I can't not believe it. So,
Leslie's about to gain a daughter-in-law. It's very exciting.
I know. So incredible.
Enjoy everything. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. It's going
to
be amazing.
Of course it will.
Yeah. It's going to be fabulous. And I have a few things to do between now and then, but I'll get them all done. I always do.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank
you. You really are amazing. and how's your house project?
It's the Waco house, you mean? It's good. I had a couple things I was supposed to do this week, and I didn't get them done, so I have to do them tonight when I get to the beach. So, yeah, it's a never-ending juggle of time in the day.
Plus,
my youngest son is home, so, you know, anytime he's here, I want to give him my full attention. And my middle son is coming to L.A. in 5 hours, so it's a little crazy, but it's all good. I'm blessed. So blessed.
Why you have to sort of hyper-focus on them and just enjoy it. We all know, you know, somehow you'll get it all done, and what you don't get done won't matter.
That's true.
Now, I have to tell you, I am looking at today's show notes for those that are listening. Leslie and I sort of write out our questions and talk about them, usually review them a little ahead of time, except that I had a doctor's appointment this morning for an eye exam. And, you know, they put all the magical drops in.
Oh, so your eyes are dilated?
Oh, my gosh. I tell you.
Can you read them?
I'm looking at my computer. Oh, yeah, because I put my sunglasses on. Kind of killed the glare a little. It's the strangest thing. And I thought, well, I will not be painting today. That's for sure. Unless I get some sort of miracle clearing happening. But
and don't be driving. That's bad, too.
No. I was seated in the waiting room. Behind an elderly man that came in with what turned out to be a friend of his who had brought him. And this guy was so on the ball. He knew the names of every person he interacted with. He was discussing issues of like how the mind is, you know, our memories are what make us individuals. And he like had the most, I don't know, eloquent conversation. Turned out he was a musician, which in my mind I was thinking, that's probably what's kept him young. And then he started talking about poetry, and I was all set to jump into the conversation and say, well, don't forget the visual arts in terms of what it does, you know, for your brain and your health and keeping you engaged. Well, he got up to go into his appointment, and I had to ask, do you mind, excuse me, sir, how old is the gentleman you were with? 94.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was so inspiring to me. I thought, this is why it doesn't matter what you do, as long as, you know, you kind of stay active and that business of firing up your brain. I feel like the practice of music or poetry or art, it should almost be prescriptive over a certain age. Because,
of course.
You know, having this in your life, whatever it is, but for obviously for us, it's, you know, this visual thing. I think it's so important for health. So I drove back very slowly with my very thick, dark glasses on, thinking to myself, gosh, we are so lucky to be able to have this as part of our lives, because it's not only sort of good for our, you know, soul and our heart, but it's actually good for your brain. And there's just another reason to keep doing it. So based on that, I was pretty fired up about today's show.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. You just never know who you're going to jump into.
Yeah.
So on that note, I think I'll launch right in and tell you that today we're going to take sort of a glance back. it's a look at the basics, kind of tools and equipment every artist should at least consider using. And I think this was born out of a lot of questions I've been getting lately, just sort of in the path of my everyday life. You know, people who realize you're an artist or you practice art, whatever, however you like to phrase it, who ask, who, you know, they look wistfully and they say, oh, I wish I could do that. And from my perspective, I was thinking, you know, how do you make people realize how accessible this really is?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Leslie, it's been a while since you and I started painting or started painting again. And I think it's important to remember that when you started the show, you know, we were all kind of coming back into this art world 7 or 8, 10 years ago, whatever it was. Time
almost
to
eight.
Fly. Yeah, but there's a lot of listeners, you know, who are just starting out, or maybe there are people that are just thinking about it the way I think a lot of my friends did, you know, sort of discovering the show at the right time. And we have those people coming all the time. The other thing that's happening amongst sort of our group is a lot of people who have been painting and practicing for the last 10 years are starting to teach. And I think it's important that we all remember what it's like to be a beginner. And
mm-hmm.
from my point of view, I think reviewing kind of the materials that we all use and some of the tools and tips might benefit sort of both of those sorts of people who are listening. The people who are just starting out and don't know how to begin, and the people who are going to be standing in front of them, you know, as instructors or teachers
mm-hmm.
trying to help them along their way. And, you know, you and Dreema were part of my confidence building back in the early days. And I think, no, I'm not kidding. I think it's really important because, you know, it's overwhelming when you think about doing this. I've told the story. I went into what used to be Utrecht, and I asked them where, I finally went up to the counselor and had to ask, where's the turpentine? And they were, and they had to explain to me that turpentine was out, odorless mineral spirits or Gamsol was in, and it was sort of a start of a whole new set of tools. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Aha,
yeah.
Me.
Very, very true. Well,
yeah.
So today we are going to talk about tools and equipment that every artist should consider using. And as you said, it's so intimidating. You know, you go into the art store and OMG, there's 8,000 different aisles on paint alone. And let's start talking about paint. And even within the definition of paint, you can choose oil paints, acrylic paints, watercolors, colored pencil, pastels.
Yeah.
There's so many options out there. So it's probably wise to kind of commit to the materials you want to spend your time and money on buying, because they're, you know, they're, even though you can start out with student grade paints, they're still, you know, they are costly. And
absolutely.
You don't, unless you're playing, I would suggest you buy the best paint that you can afford.
Mm-hmm.
But, and realize that over time, there's going to be paint that you don't use because you don't use that paint anymore because you don't like it for some reason. But at the
mm-hmm.
beginning, try to focus on the ones that kind of capture your heart. Now, the problem is colors. There's like thousands
mm-hmm.
of options on colors. And
yeah.
I would highly encourage you to use a limited palette. The first three painting workshops I took, those three artists were plein air painters. They all used a limited palette. And so having not gone to art school, I assumed every artist used a limited palette. I knew no different. Thank heavens.
Uh-huh.
Because
yeah.
a limited palette, there's so much that you can get from that. Number one, it simplifies the process for you because you don't have to sit there and choose from, you know, 50 colors. My limited palette has a whopping 6. But the other thing is it's less expensive. The next thing is you will learn to mix colors like no other. It's the best training I think there is out there. And
mm-hmm.
the last thing is when you're painting, it all comes from 5 or 6 or whatever colors. They have a tendency
yep.
to just work well together. The colors do. So there's
right.
a lot of reason. And if you're going to limit your palette, Margaret actually put this list together, and I agree 1,000%. You want to start out with titanium white, and you need a lot of it. Always buy it in the largest tubes possible. Then you're going to want a cool yellow, like a lemon yellow, and then a warm yellow, like a cad yellow medium. And it's really hard. It's really hard to fake those. So having both is really important. Alizarin crimson is the first color here that's a transparent color. And there's something about when you mix alizarin crimson with other colors, it's just fabulous. And it's because you're starting with a color that doesn't have any white in it and it's transparent.
Right.
And that's your cool red, but you can warm that up very quickly with yellow. So we had titanium white, lemon yellow, cad yellow medium, alizarin, which I mentioned is kind of your cool red, and then cad red medium, which I actually took out of my palette because I couldn't, after a while, I just didn't like the color. And I can get cad red medium out of alizarin with a little bit of white and yellow. But that's your warm version of red. And then ultramarine blue, which is another transparent color, which is fabulous. And then phthalo blue or phthalo blue green or phthalo green yellow or phthalo blue yellow.
I know. But it's that nice greeny blue that kind
it's
of
that turquoise,
you know, ice
color that you can't fake. That you can really only get from a phthalo. But understand that they're all different and make sure if you want a phthalo blue that you get that because there's that turquoisey green. You could put a little ultramarine in it and you'd be fine. But here's the thing about phthalo. It is like this color that ends up kind of getting on everything. And I tell you, it's also something that has to be used incredibly limiting and sparingly.
Because
it's out there, but it's beautiful. And then
almost every artist I know ends up with, even if they haven't opened it, they end up with phthalo blue on their sleeves or in their car.
On their car seat or on the door handle or, I use, because I paint so many seascapes, there is definitely phthalo in my workshops, and I always cook dinner for my students, so they're in the house. And I can't tell you, every night I went around with the wet wipes cleaning up the phthalo that ended up on the door handle and on the corner of the couch, and oh, man.
Yep.
That was scary. Yep. The other thing, and this is a great idea, is a simple color wheel, which they cost like $5 at Blick. But study it, learn about color opposites, understand the warm and the cool colors, understand how complementary colors work well. I mean, that, I tell you, being able to mix paint I truly think I could look at any color anywhere and mix it almost exactly because I've spent so much time mixing. And the ability to be able to do that is really important. And then to say, okay, I love this color, but I need a cool version, not this warm version. And getting kind of that mastered is really important. That took way too long. Sorry.
No, I think it's really important. I'll tell you something. I hear people all the time say, oh, I just wish I had studied color theory. And I think to myself, really? Because you just need to look at the color wheel and it starts to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the opposite, literally opposite on the wheel of red is green. The opposite of blue, if you go across the way, it's orange.
Yeah.
And the more someone sort of just looks at that, I think, you know, there's just a few simple rules. Mix opposites and you're going to get a gray. People should not be intimidated by that. And you were the first person I ever saw with a small color wheel. and I thought, oh, isn't that interesting? Because it had never occurred to me, just because I had studied it for 30 years. I mean, it had always been part of my world. But, of course, if someone didn't have a wheel to look at, how could it make sense? So I think that is $5 well spent. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I have a tip now for someone who's trying to – maybe you want a little more than the basic, you know, limited palette that we've given you. Maybe, you know, like all of us, you're like a kid in the candy store. If you go into an art store, it's like, oh, there are hundreds of colors and I want them all. You know, 64 crayons in the box was never enough, was it? It's the same sort of thing. If you are thinking that you'd like to expand your palette, one of the best tips I can give you is to go online and do a search for the material list that your favorite artists will post for their workshops. Yesterday I was sort of wanted to prove my theory here because I do it all the time. And I just sort of went in and I punched in Kevin McPherson's material list, and boom, it came up, what he tells everyone to bring to his workshops. Richard Schmidt's color palette, boom, it came up. Kathy Anderson's supply list, boom, it comes up. You can, you know, if there's a particular painter whose colors you love, you look at their paintings and maybe they paint florals and you want to paint florals, you can find exactly what they tell their students to bring, which includes the colors. And what a great way to, like, save yourself a lot of extra work by trying to figure it out. It's right. It's of everyone I Googled popped up online. So I highly recommend doing that. It will also tell you what kind of medium they use, you know, whether it's linseed oil or something else. It'll tell you what they have their students paint on, whether it's, you know, panels or stretched canvas or whatever. But it's spelled out for you, and it's right there. So knock yourself out with that research. You'll get you'll go to the art store with a good list next time. I bet I
there's,
could have looked you up last.
No, and another thing you need is tools. I mean, you got your paint.
Yeah.
You know what you want, but then what do you do? And there's so many items. There's a lot of gadgets that you don't need. I highly recommend you have a glass palette. And I went to a glass guy, and he had all these, like, seconds that were, I think, cut, and then the edges were all, what do you call that when they finish them off so you're not going to cut yourself?
Rounded edges or gouges.
Yeah. And they were, like, the wrong size, and they were, like, a dollar. So I bought one, and then I painted the back a light gray with a spray can and used that for my glass palette, and I absolutely love it. And then I have some portable ones, too. You're going to need some kind of medium unless you paint with the palette knife. You don't. But and Gamsol, I think, is highly by far the most recommended product for a medium. And we've talked about that a lot on this show. But you can do linseed oil, solvent-free gel. Just do not under any circumstances use anything like terpenoid because that can actually kill you.
It's bad.
I'm not kidding.
And other painters hate to smell it. It's sort of like an alarm bell. Yeah.
Yep. And if you use acrylics, consider maybe an extender or other mediums that will change the drying time because that was the hardest thing for me, going from oils to acrylics, understanding that those things dry so fast. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many products, but I would talk to other artists and find out what they use and don't feel like you have to keep buying things. I used to just literally stick my paintings in the freezer when they were halfway done. I never bought the palette that you can put them in, but, you know, I mean, it's just, after a while, it just comes down to, I think, ease and simplicity. So don't feel like you have to overdo it by any means.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I assigned myself this next topic because
I can't talk about brushes.
You'll talk about the palette knives because I just remember being so impressed with your collection. But mark making, I mean, okay. I've actually had my art group, you know, we meet once a month for dinner and a quick overview of what everyone's doing, kind of a mini critique. It's really fun. And when they were here, we went up into my studio, and literally one of my favorite members gasped. And I thought, what? And she was not, like, surprised and pleased. She was sort of horrified at how many brushes I had. Well, you know, I am unapologetic about this because I love brushes, and I do have different brushes for different things. We can talk more about that later. But if you're going to paint, right, you either use brushes or palette knives, pretty much. That's your choice to apply the paint to the surface. I know people use squeegees and things, but for today's purposes, let's keep it simple. And I don't think it's any secret that I believe in buying sort of good quality materials. And your brushes, I think, have a lot to do with how much you actually enjoy the physical act of painting. Here's the thing. I know people when artists get together and they're talking about, oh, I have some new brushes, everyone wants to know how they like the brush, right? And if people love a brush, they light up because there's something about, you hear people talk about the flex or the snap or the really nice edge they can get when they turn it or the way it holds paint, moves paint. I am all for getting a good brush and really enjoying what it will do with your oil, well, in my case, oil paint. And here's the thing, a good brush is going to outlast four bad ones. And the bad ones shed. You know, and every now and then I'll find a hair in a painting, but I've had some, you know, bad brushes, which I have quickly trashed. But it's because they lose their hairs or the hairs break or it becomes really sort of dried out and more like a broom than a brush. If you're at the start and you don't want to invest a lot of money into, you know, really higher-end brushes, I understand. And I will tell you that there's a brush made by Utrecht. I'm pretty sure it's called the Manglon. I don't even know how to say that. M-A-N-G-L-O-N. Those Manglon brushes are synthetics, so they're a little less fragile, but they have a lovely snap. They clean well. It won't break your heart if you lose one or, you know, if you're a little rough on it or over time, it's time has come. It's not the end of the world. A set of four brushes, now granted, none of these are huge, but it's a nice set of four brushes. It's under $30 for four brushes at Blick. And I know everyone knows how to find Blick, but I'm going to give you some web addresses today. And Blick is www.dickblick.com. If you want to reward yourself and you're ready to move up to some really beautiful brushes, and I'd say, you know, everyone's got a different price point that they're comfortable with, but hands down, I favor the Rosemary and Company brushes. I have some old brushes that were made by Grumbacher in Ireland, and I've had them for 30 years, but I treat them as if they are kittens when I wash them. I'm so gentle with them when I try them, and they are no longer made. So for my money, the brushes I buy today that I try to take really good care of are the Rosemary and Company brushes. You can get, they have many different levels, but when you decide it's time to upgrade, you can look on the website, you can request a paper catalog, because sometimes, you know, you just like to flip through it and really get a sense of what you're buying. I highly recommend going onto the website. It's www.rosemaryandco.com. So all one word, rosemaryandco.com.
Right. Awesome. Okay, if you happen to paint with palette knives, which if you don't, you should, there's a lot of good ones out there, but here's what I'm going to tell you. The thing about palette knives is one little tiny thing can go wrong and you have to toss it. The biggest thing is somehow it might get a little bit bent. And if it's bent, forget it. If you don't clean it and it has paint on it and you can't get it off, you have to toss it. If it gets a little corroded over time, you have to toss it. The good news is the brown wooden handled with a metal knife, palette knives, cost like $5 at Blick. And don't, there aren't any really like, you know, gold plated ones that you want to get. Just keep it simple. And I only use three different size palette knives, and you can go on my website and click on it and it'll show you. But I use a small one, a medium size, and a large one. And the large one is about 3 inches long. The small one is less than an inch long. And it's not about the tip, it's about the side of the blade. And after time, I really just cut down to two palette knives, the large one and the smaller one. Now, that being said, I do have some much bigger palette knives that I use for the abstracts, because sometimes if I'm doing an 8 foot by 10 foot, little tiny palette knives, not so good. And those I keep a little longer. But yeah, and even after a while, I really kind of was using my 3-inch palette knife all the time, even on a little 6x6 painting.
Yeah.
So yeah, but it's just I have a lot of them, but I really, really only use two, just so you know. Yeah.
And the whole ticket with a palette knife, right, is just wipe it off clean when the paint is wet at the end of the day. I know. Leslie and I would
wipe
be painting
my knife
together.
I probably wipe my knife 500 times in one painting, but probably more. But yeah.
To keep it
no,
clean.
It's so simple.
Yeah.
The cleanup is non-existent. So that's nice.
I know. Leslie and I would be painting together, and she said, all right, I'm going to clean up now. And I'd be like, okay. And I'd start with the brushes and turn around, and she's packed and ready to go. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have that dexterity you have. I've seen you take that 3-inch blade and, like, put the smallest, you know, white line, the rope line of a sailboat in. And I think, really, with me, it would end up looking like someone had taken their thumb and done it.
Yeah,
after time, I guess you get dexterous. Yeah, it's a sight to behold. All right, I'm going to address something I have no business talking about. I love watercolor. I'm not very good at it. It's one of those things I do. I think a lot of oil painters are like me in that sometimes the oil paints and the setup are a little too much for the occasion. And so I do have a small set of watercolors. If I'm telling the truth, I have a few. But the whole ticket with the watercolor is, for me, it's a good brush. And I'm a big fan of starting with only a few. And again, I think you buy good ones. A nice beginner's brush will still cost you like more than a dinner out. But if you take care of it, it will last you for years. Today, I think we'll mention a lot of different websites that we use for resources. And I don't know, way back long, long ago, someone had pointed me to Cheap Joe's. Cheap Joe's sounded like someplace I didn't necessarily want to shop. I looked at their website and the information and what they had, and I was completely wrong. I love Cheap Joe's. It's a really good company. They have a lot of great information on their site, including some of the best short how-to videos I've ever seen. You know, how to oil out an oil painting, how to lay down a consistent wash for a watercolor. And the truth is, because Cheap Joe himself is a watercolorist, I think that for watercolor supplies, they're a really great resource.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on there, you will find more than you ever needed to know about watercolor brushes and paints and pigments and papers. So please check that out. It's, let's see, I've got to find this on here. www.cheapjoes.com, spelled exactly the way it sounds. CHEAPJOES. So cheapjoes.com. The other place to go back to for watercolor brushes, and I'm sure there's a million others, please, I can imagine the emails I'm going to get, but Rosemary and Company have a really impressive collection. And what I love is I got my very favorite travel brush from there. And a travel brush is exactly what you can imagine. It's kind of a nice pointed round brush that has, the barrel is stainless steel, and it has a cap with a hole in it so that, you know, it can dry your brush hairs out. They don't get, I guess, moldy or something, but it's sort of this beautiful little brush that collapses up to about 4.5 inches, and it fits right in with my tiny set, and I just love it. I do treat it very well, but because of the fact that it was made to travel, it has never been damaged kind of in transit, which I think is a big thing. So
wonderful.
There you go.
Cool. Okay, so let's talk surfaces.
Oh, boy.
What do you paint on? There's canvas. There's canvas panels or paper. There's canvases that are 8x10 that cost $2. There's canvases that are 8x10 that cost $50.
Right.
So there are so many options out there. If you're first starting out and you're practicing, oh my gosh, don't spend an arm and a leg on really expensive canvases. You want to have some fun,
right,
and not be like freaking out that your painting's not good enough to go on that canvas. So, oil and acrylic painters will typically use canvas panels, gesso board, oil paper by Arches, gessoed wood panels, stretched canvas, certainly, and you can get those with cotton, linen, a million other surfaces too. So you can ask other artists what they like, but it's going to come down to what you like. Do you want that textured surface? Do you want a smooth surface? And I would really say experiment. I am a huge fan of the gesso boards. I like, because I push a lot with my knife, I like a harder surface that doesn't give as much. Don't get me wrong, I love painting on canvases, but I would prefer to paint on a flat board. So the key is, it's totally up to you, but don't get stuck in the cheap stuff, because the cheap canvases can warp. That's probably the worst thing and most common thing that'll happen. And then you have to sometimes they have to get restretched if it's a great painting. But it's really hard if you paint a painting and you go to sell it and it sells 2 months later and you pull it out of storage and you're like, oh, it's warped. I'm looking at one that I painted probably 3 years ago that's a 48x48 on my wall, and it's completely square, and I know I didn't pay very much money for it. So, you just have to, once again, use the best that you can afford. But if you're starting out, don't blow your wallet on expensive canvases, because, we all have to have time to play and everything else. So
I completely agree with that. The only thing I would say, and it's sort of another one of these little tips, is that for anyone that's using gesso board, which, as a matter of fact, Leslie, I love it as well. The trick with gesso board is I see people struggle when they use too much medium and then it kind of slips off the surface, So think about how much oil you're adding in or how thin you're painting. And the other thing is, without a doubt, the synthetic bristles, the brushes that are made of synthetic hairs, I believe they're nylon or something, work better. They work much better than like a boar bristle. For some reason, it's just too scratchy. And as soon as people switch, I know I saw a group that was struggling, and then everybody started passing around a rosemary, I think it was called the ivory flat, because the ivory is synthetic. And suddenly people were like, oh, this is what it's supposed to feel like. So don't get discouraged. Sometimes if you're fighting the materials, it's because there's an easier way to do it. And, you just don't know it until you do it. So
definitely.
Gesso board is made by a company called Ampersand. It's AMPERSAND. And Ampersand has a really good website. And if you go on there, you can see what is possible with all their different panels. Now, they have panels that are like clay board and gesso board and plenty of other things. Some are made for watercolors. Others are multimedia. The gesso board, they'll tell you, is great for acrylics or oil. But the information is there. It's in the art store as well. But sometimes when you're standing in front of, thousands of boards, it's a little overwhelming. And I may or may not have reached for the wrong one once or twice and brought home and thought, clay board, what do I do with this? Try and do your research ahead of time. Gamblin also has an information page that is worth checking out, regardless of where you are in your art career. If you look on the Gamblin site, they actually break down and tell you what every one of their mediums does when it interacts with your paints, slow drying, fast drying, high gloss, you name it. They've got a product for it. But that's a page worth visiting, and it's pretty simple. It's www.gamblincolors.com. That's G-A-M blincolors.com. And I applaud these companies that actually put the information out in a way that I can read it, you know, not standing in the art store. For me, that helps me make the decisions ahead of time. Be pretty
Definitely.
Sure I'm getting right. Yeah.
So true. So true. Okay. Where am I? Oh, watercolor papers. Okay, quick disclaimer.
Yeah.
I've never painted watercolors. Maybe I have one time, literally once. So I'm just going to read this for you.
Go ahead.
if it's not correct, you can blame Margaret, because I have no personal experience. But Margaret says, price
Margaret
is often
says.
An indicator of quality, but a small block of watercolor paper from a good company like Arches, now I do know Arches is good, will serve
yeah.
you well. Margaret highly recommends that you buy larger sheets and cut them down, because you're going to go through watercolor paper very quickly and you
yep.
won't be prepared by having enough on hand.
Right. Now, so. since it's a Margaret says, I'm going to tell you, I had more fun at the most wonderful art store in Sydney, Australia, because I decided I just wanted to buy... I needed a brush, and of course I ended up coming out with just this exquisite Winsor & Newton mini watercolor set that, you know, fits in your hand and comes with its own brush, and oh, it's just divine, and I had to have it. And then I started looking at their papers, and they had far more paper brands and types than I had ever seen here, probably because I just don't spend that much time. For me, if you have a block, what it does is it keeps it from warping, because there's some sort of gum that's applied around the side. So you actually slip your palette knife under a finished painting and it separates it from the rest of the block. It sort of like, think of it as a stack of cold cuts, and you just take the top one off. That's your painting. However, if you buy a large sheet and you can just spend some time cutting it, you can have a stack of paper ready to go. And that is, I think, the cheapest way to do it. Take one piece, because you can go really small. And, you know, we artists like our dreamy papers, nice thick and lots of rag. And you might as well enjoy the process. And cutting the paper, for me, is half of the thrill. So I'm going to move now to easels, because I may have a problem with this. It's a little bit of an addiction. I'm proud to tell you that I've not bought an easel probably in 3 years, but I am guilty of spending a lot of time looking at them in the last few weeks, because I realize maybe I can do better than what I've been doing. Anyway, I read in my research that the average artist buys an easel every year. They actually said 1.1 easels a year, so I guess that means 11.
A year?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Think about it. Leslie, the first time I ever laid eyes on you, you were coming down the stairs of Dick Blick in California with Dreama, and you had
mm-hmm.
just purchased something like 7 easels.
Oh, that was for my studio.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, wow, she buys more easels than I do. I have to tell you, I never stop looking for the perfect easel. I have several that I wouldn't part with for any amount of money in the world, but that's sort of another story. I have my favorites. But I think for anybody who's like maybe at the beginning, you can get a really inexpensive tabletop easel that comes with a storage box under it, and that will serve you well while you fall deep into this addiction of mine, which is to look for the perfect one. If you're the kind of person that doesn't like to sit, or you don't want it on your lap or whatever it is, then go for a simple stand-up easel that you can set up in your home, but maybe something that you can collapse and bring with you if you do decide you want to start painting outdoors. I think it's important that whatever you do, you try to keep it really simple at the start, because I promise you, you will buy more. I'm going to go through some of the easels that are out there. There are as many easels available in the world as there are artists, I'm convinced. So this is by no means an exclusive list. I also want to say Leslie and I don't get paid by anybody to promote.
No, we
their
don't. Sadly, we don't.
We don't get free anything. Nope, nobody. We owe nothing to anyone. We're just giving you our opinions and probably the benefit of telling you or not telling you to buy something that hasn't worked for us. So, Leslie, I'm going to let you kick it off with probably the easel I use most outside of my studio.
With my favorite easel, you mean?
Yeah.
The James Coulter system. Okay. This is an easel designed by an artist. His name is James Coulter, and that is spelled C-O-U-L-T-E-R. C-O-U-L-T-E-R. It is basically brilliant. It's light. It's portable. It involves a tripod. And what's interesting is you have the tripod, and it enables you to put your canvas board on the tripod, and then there's a palette that actually then sits on, kind of hooks onto the tripod, and it weights it down. But often I don't even use that part of it, because if I'm working in my studio, I'll have my painting on the tripod, and then next to it on the right-hand side, I'll have my glass palette, you know, on my my cabinet. So, so it's just... it's just amazing. It's easy. I love it. It's so great. It's not super expensive, and it's the one that's lasted with me for like 6 years, I think, I would say.
Right.
So it's awesome. Really, really great.
I have a few different sizes of boxes because...
of course you do. I do too, actually.
Yeah. There are times when I want the smallest possible. If you're painting outside, oftentimes it's about how heavy is it. And how quickly can you set up and take down, right?
Yeah.
And I just find, and he has a great video. If you look on YouTube, I think you can just type in, you know, James Coulter easel, and you'll get to see how he sets it up. And yeah, I watched that about 100 times before I bought my first one, and it's a purchase I do not regret. All right, number two. Okay, I'm going to sound like I've got a problem with materials here, but okay, a French easel. Now, I don't know why, but after probably 25 years after I bought my own first French easel, I am back to, for some reason, I'm using them a lot. I have a full box, which is probably, I'm guessing now, maybe 12 inches wide, you know, if you think of the... if you think of it as like a suitcase, it pops up, it's got legs, you can carry it, it's got a strap. When it pops up, it is really good and stable in the wind. I have a full box that I got from Cheap Joe's, as a matter of fact, ages ago. And I also have half French easel, which is, guess what, half that width. It's a really skinny box. It's the original French easel. French easel, I believe, is the one that was made by Julian, J-U-L-I-A-N. If you ever see one at a yard sale, you should buy it, because they were made out of beautiful wood that doesn't splinter, and they're just a brilliant design. They are heavy. They're not light like the Coulter. They don't pop up, but for me, because I'm quite tall, I always like that I can bring the paintings up higher. You can do that with the Coulter as well. Those are the only two I've ever found where I can actually have the surface at eye level for me. This is like the gold standard, I think, of easels. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google it online. Look at a French easel. And just know that these are old school, but, boy, they are hard to replace. The second one I wanted to talk about is called the Take It easel, and that's exactly as it sounds, T-A-K-E-I-T, Take It easel. Another name for it is the Gloucester easel, because it's a very simple design. It's like a giant wooden tripod. It looks like something Monet would have been painting on in his garden. And if you've ever seen those pictures, you know exactly what I mean now. It's a very brilliant design. Doesn't have too many pieces that move. It can take a large panel or a small one, but the thing about the Take It easel is that it is under 10 pounds, and it is absolutely windproof. what I find really interesting is that they're made to order. I always like that when I know who's making it. It's like the Coulter easel. If you order a Coulter easel, you're going to talk to James Coulter about it. And if you ordered a Take It easel, you would talk to the fellow up in Vermont who, you know, kind of as he's talking to you, thinks about, well, I could have it to you in about 4 weeks. It's a great easel if wind is your issue and you just want to be able to conquer that. I highly recommend looking at it.
Aren't typically the French easels the ones that are a pain in the you-know-what to set up?
You know, all right.
I have to ask.
I'm
going to
tell
that
everyone.
Comment.
Yes, they are a pain to set up unless you do it the right way. Here's
right.
how you do it. You take your box, you turn it over on the ground. So that's the legs, which fold right up against it, are now facing the sky. You,
mm-hmm.
while it's on the ground, you unfold the legs and tighten screws. It has three legs, two in the front and one in the back. You get that tightened, you turn it over, problem solved, you're set up. That's it.
Yeah.
Now all you have to do is open it. But people stand there trying to, like, drop the legs, holding it, like, you know, face up, and you just think, why are you doing that? No, the whole secret is to flip it over on its back, extend the legs, and then just turn it over. Piece of cake. I don't know why that's hard.
it is.
Having
taught for many years, it's hysterical. How many people show
right?
up with a new easel, and I am just like, oh, man. Can you do me a favor and talk about the Strata Micro Easel? I mean, I have seen it. Artists have it in my class. They love it.
Yep.
It's metal, correct? Isn't it metal?
Metal and plastic.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. I'm pretty sure this is the one that Scotty Leatherwood uses. The new one, the micro easel that they've just come out with, is pretty impressive. It's incredibly light. And the nice thing, sometimes these small pochade boxes limit you. I mean, you know, you can fall in love with some of these little, like, they're called like cigar box types
mm-hmm.
of setups because, you know, they have a little place for the panel. You can use a 5x7 panel and that's it. Well, this little system, the Strata Micro, has an extender bar that pops right in, and it allows you to take a panel that in the vertical dimension is up to 14 inches and, you know, unlimited in width. So you could do a, I don't know, 14x20 and 11x14. You can do a much larger panel in this really small box. It is incredibly light. I want to say that again because, again, anybody who has grabbed their paints to go, you know, trek down to the lake and do a quick painting knows if you're carrying 15 pounds by the time you get where you're going, it feels like 50. This is like the coolest system in the world. It is not inexpensive, but I think from what I'm hearing, because I do a lot of plein air painting, it's really climbing the charts. People are starting to talk about it a lot. Artists who are where, you know, I am kind of thinking maybe we want a new system are looking at it very seriously. It's very sleek and beautifully designed, and you can check it out for yourself. It's at www.strataeasel.com. And again, the one that I was particularly struck with is the micro. That one sort of has, wish they'd send us one to try out, Leslie. We could see what we think.
Yeah, really.
I may have to fund my own research on that. We'll see. But there are just, in terms of easels, honestly, like this is not even scratching the surface. There's the Open M box. There's the EZL. There's the Soltec. These are all the names of easels that are, you know, artists are very loyal to. There's myriad others. What you need to do is, like, look in your art store, although I will say I think the big chains don't carry a lot of these more designer-oriented brands, you know, these small operations. Blick can't carry everything. So, you know, that's one place to look, but also look on YouTube, because if you can type in the name or even just plein air easel or big studio easel, whatever it is you're looking for, you can not only see them, but you can see how they get set up and how they operate. there's often small ads in the back of the art magazines, you know, whether it's Plein Air or Fine Art America, whatever. I'm always checking out what other artists have, particularly if they've been using it for a while. I have an easel, gosh, I have a Sorg easel in my studio, S-O-R-G, which I remember Carol Marine raving about after she had done a massive research project because, as you may know, her studio burned. She had to replace everything because of a wildfire in Texas. And I thought, well, I trust her as a source. So I looked at the Sorg and I watched the videos, and boy, I love this easel. And I bet three people have bought it because they've come into my studio and, you know, wanted to know more. But that's the way you do it, I think. You kind of noodle around and you look at what's out there. And, you know, without a doubt, the best resource, clearly, is other artists.
Got it.
All
okay.
right.
You're still up.
Oh, I'm such a talker today. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
What can I say? I'm pretty fired up. There are some accessories that I have come across that will really make life easier. And I mean this whether you have if you're teaching a workshop and you have, you know, 14 people in front of you, you might want to put this on your own materials list. But I have become a fan for workshops and sometimes for plein air of disposable palettes. I use the one that's called Gray Matters. You can get it just about anywhere. And in fact, you were talking, Leslie, about your glass palette, how you sprayed the underside of it gray. I am far lazier. I put a big sheet of the Gray Matters disposable palette paper on top of my workstation, and I drop my glass right on top of that, because then after I clean it off, I can always flip it over if I've scratched it up with my razor blade, which I do from time to time. So Gray Matters disposable palettes, here's the name of the game, 30-day challenge from Leslie Seda. Everyone's painting a painting a day. I would be finishing this painting thinking, oh, my gosh, I want to get this posted by midnight. It'd be, you know, 11:15, I'm finally done and happy with my painting. I clean my brushes, sort of. I look at my palette, sigh, and if I'm using a disposable palette, I can roll it up and be done with it. I don't have to go through the extra, I mean, it may only be 15 minutes, but there are times when I don't have 15 extra minutes. This has saved me from leaving, you know, a piece of glass with blobs of paint on it, or even worse, thin smears of paint on it to harden and drive me crazy the next time I get into my studio. So disposable palettes, I think, are here to stay. The Gray Matters are beautiful because you're not putting your paint down on white paper.
Got it.
Clorox White. This was a revelation to me. I bet everyone else knew this. If you do commit the cardinal sin of going to bed without cleaning off your palette, or, I don't know about you, Leslie, this is what I do. I think, well, I'm just going to go downstairs and have dinner, and then I'm going to come back, and I don't. So then I have to face a crusty palette the next time. If you take Clorox wipes and you just lay them down on top of those dried blobs of paint, and you leave it there for 10, 15 minutes. I kind of pat it so that they're touching all the paint. When you come back, that paint just wipes off like a dream. I do use a single-edged blade sometimes if I want to be really quick. But, boy, Clorox wipes, I had no idea. Brilliant. Viewfinders, cheap. You can get them, you know, at any art store. You can also just make one by cutting a square. And I think we've all, you know, used our thumb and index fingers to make a square. But having a viewfinder in your toolkit makes your composition so much easier. I know you're a fan of good cameras these days, Leslie. So I will say an iPhone or a smartphone and a camera. Always take a picture of your setup if you're doing a still life, if you're out, because, you know, if you're painting outside, you know the light's going to change. Take a quick photo just so you can have that for reference. The next one I'm going to thank Leslie Seda for, the app VSCO, V-S-C-O. you can use that not only to edit any images, which is nice if you're trying to work something out, but you can turn any photo into a black and white. And if you're struggling with values or composition, boy, that is the quickest way I have now to solve that and really see what's going on, particularly if the sun is high. Seems to me that makes the light much harder for me to edit. Let's see. Oh, and a decent backpack. I want to say try before you buy, particularly if you're over the age of 24, because a well-fitting backpack is worth its weight in gold. And at this point, I want to refer back to that James Coulter video where we said he shows you how to do his setup. I watched I can't even remember the name of it, the backpack that he used, and I went out and bought one. And I'm telling you, that's probably, along with the easel, the best thing I ever did. So,
awesome. Okay, last but not least is a wet paint carrier. So, it's amazing to me how many people go to a workshop, paint a beautiful painting, and have no way to get it out of the workshop to where they're staying or what, or home for that matter. I usually find a place where people can go get pizza boxes without pizza in them near my workshops, and sometimes it's a dollar, sometimes they're free. Most I've ever paid is $3. And pizza boxes do work great because you just need a glue gun and you just glue the back of it. Now, this is assuming that you're painting with a like a gesso board or a panel board. Doesn't work quite as well with canvases, but you really need to have the ability to not only get back to your hotel, but get back to your home. If you're plein air painting down at the park, you still don't want to get that, number one, get the painting ruined in your car, get your car covered in oil paint, whatever it may be. So you need to really be prepared. And for some reason, this is the thing that everyone forgets, which is so interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, Raymar, they have corrugated boxes that are you can put multiple panels in. I have like three different sizes. They're these gray kind of plasticky, cardboardy that work really, really well. There's some Wind River Arts has a wooden box that you can with customizable dividers that you can take different size panels.
Yeah.
A lot of easels have an option on the back side of the easel where you can actually slide those in too. But you just want to make sure not to forget that, because I can't tell you how many people have trashed a wonderful painting trying to get those things out of the studio or out of my studio into their car, and I've seen so many disasters and it just breaks my heart.
Oh.
So it's a really important thing to think about. Now, it's a little harder when you have paintings on canvases, but you have to make accommodations to protect your art.
For sure.
Really, really,
for
really
sure.
Important. Yeah.
Well,
so I hope
funny. That's what they forget.
I know. It's the one thing. It's really funny. A lot of times when I teach here, I'll have some pizza boxes in my studio just because I know. People aren't going
great.
To have the accommodation. But if you want to, you can reach out to Margaret or I if you have any questions. But we hope that kind of going over some of these really important supplies helped. You can reach me at my email, which you can find on my website. There's just a link, and Margaret's on Instagram. If you send me an Instagram message, I get so many, like hundreds a day. You're probably better off sending me an email. Just saying.
Life is hard when you have, how many now, 200 and some odd thousand followers.
I'm at 224,000. Yeah, it's weird.
Holy
really weird.
Smoke.
I know,
it's
crazy. It's crazy.
It's so
but
much
it's wonderful.
Fun.
Yeah,
yes, it is.
No, it's
all right.
Really big fun. Okay, so next week there's no show. Because a week from today, now normally we do the show on Thursdays, but we're flexible because we've been doing this for almost 8 years. So sometimes it's on a Friday. But next Thursday, I'm driving up to Napa. Next Friday, I will be at a bridal luncheon and getting ready for the rehearsal dinner. And next Saturday, my son's getting married. So you won't be hearing a lot from me in the next week.
That is amazing. Well, Leslie, have a wonderful time. Thank you. Best of everything to your family. And
thank you.
I'll look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks.
You will. Thanks.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.